evening. What a treat. Emily's here. Jorge is here. Jane is here. This is wonderful. And a new face. Sheila. Welcome. Let's do introductions around.
I'm Dan.
Randy.
Russ.
Emily.
Angel.
Jorge.
Samia.
Britt.
Sheila.
Kitty.
Jane.
Julian.
Angie. Jane is here from New Mexico because we're driving up to Arcata tomorrow. We're going to do an Arcata thing for 5 days and then a Willits thing for 6 days. So Carolyn will be here next Tuesday and we'll lead the discussion. We will be thinking of you all. Up in the rainy forest up there.
Since you're calendaring, what about Saturday?
Carolyn's going to do the Saturday
okay.
Also. Yes, yes, thank you. And it's a half day sit.
Yes.
Which date?
This coming Saturday.
7, 8, 9, 10, 11, is it? 10th, yeah. So Carolyn will do that also. Any other announcements that we need to know about? Do you know anything, Britt? Okay. We are coming to close to the end of the studying the words of Grandpa Coben, you could say. As I've said before, some of us put together this cobbled together this little thing called Aspects of Sitting from various transcriptions that we made from Coben's talks through the years. And tried to make a little condensed gift for everyone out of Coben's words. And then he said, don't publish it. He said, wait until I'm dead. So now he's dead. So we're using it. And I can see why it's not a very skillfully done cobbling together, but it's useful even so. And I've been very happy to go through this with you all. We're on page 19 tonight on a page called Self and Others. And what we've been doing is passing the paper around and each one reading a paragraph. So, shall we begin?
Self and others. To be born on this earth is to have the whole thing. From the beginning, there are precise distinctions between things. The whole thing is yourself. This is how it started. That is how it started. When we become deeply involved in precise discrimination between things for a long time, we forget our original self. We don't lose the original nature, but we forget. The sit is to recover that original nature fully. And to stay with it for a while. To get up from sitting is to gain excellent relationships with other selves, many dilemmas, people, plants, birds, jobs. Suzuki Roshi talks about this original self as the big mind in which everything exists without exception.
Dzogchen Zenji said, to master the Buddha's way is to master to clarify your own self. Through that you can clarify the own selves of all others. He said, your focus is to clarify yourself, your presence. He also said, quote, it is the greatest living subject to clarify your own birth and death matter, end quote. The subject is so close, pointing to yourself like this. If the subject is outside, we can study it pretty well. But when you start pointing to yourself like this, it is almost impossible. Our fresh eye is open toward the outside, so the same eye cannot be used for the interior realm. When we turn around and make our interior world an external object and analyze what's happening, we usually call this psychology or religious studies. But this kind of study of an objectified self is not what we are doing. How to be with the self, which rejects analysis in every way, is a very important point.
What the Zen causes in you is what you already have and how you actually are. That's something different from your actual experience. Every one of us has a deep concern about ourselves, a wish to be valuable in both for ourselves and for those whom we are concerned. We want to be truly important being for all. It seems that meditation practice gives some way to clarify yourself as an important being. As a seeker of deep understanding about where you are and how you exist and what is actually going on,
oh, I think that's the new paragraph.
You came quite naturally to sit.
Without knowing that this action has some unclear ambition in it, it points to a very natural, unconscious confidence in your being. To desire perfect enlightenment is the biggest ambition to have. As long as you sit, you have to have such ambition. It is also very ambitious to want to understand other existences.
How do you experience the existence of others? It is very difficult to really know that others exist, are a different existence from yourself. Usually what you see in others is who you are. So your experiences when and where you existed. Actually, we don't care whether others exist or not, but when you reach an ultimate understanding of yourself, a big question appears. Is this just me existing, or are there some other people on this earth? The model of primitive experience is children's consciousness when they are 2 to 3 years old. Small children don't have a sense of past and future, only the present, and the only existence is themselves. Even though we become a member of society and see and are taught that there are other existences, that children's consciousness stays with us. The turning point comes when we begin loving other people. Do you remember when you began to love beings when you were small? It was a very big event. It's a kind of opening up of other worlds with your capacity and opening yourself at the same time, opening up to accept other existences.
A very difficult person to meet with and understand is actually our own self. The whole experience of getting to know others is actually to have a standard to reach to yourself. Endlessly approaching the matter of oneself is the focus of Zazen practice. Clarifying your own existence is actually expanding your own self endlessly. Whatever you experience becomes yourself, and you see into yourself with the existence of others, which is not different from yourself.
That's a mystery. And if it's hard to see, hard because it's so close, it's also very, very hard to talk about. A Korean practice, often they emphasize don't know mind. If we get into a mode of studying the self in the way that we study algebra or English literature, that's not it. We really have to drop everything that we know, surrender to not knowing, and allow ourselves to be informed by ourselves. Something in us is always at work, always alight. The study part is to allow and accept. Although it's strange to say, there's much about us that's very stubborn and self-involved in a kind of superficial way of wanting to maintain ourself, maintain our known identity, the face that we're familiar with, and to step into the unknown, to step back, and to allow the whole of it. As I often say, we don't have to throw away the ego. The ego is just the ideas that we have about ourselves. That too is a kind of cobbling together. We cobble together all the various ideas that we have and say, this is me. This is how I know myself. My favorite color is yellow. I like such and such kind of music. I'm such and such old. And it's all true. It's all true. But it's just the smallest scrap of truth. And as we begin to release our tight grip on our self-identity and stay open to discovery, to not knowing, slowly, slowly, it's not that we ourselves become bigger and grander and more important, but that we connect more and more with everything and everyone. It's as if the gift of the world can't be given until we are willing to accept it, which means willing to accept ourself, to completely accept ourself with all our mistakes, all our suffering, it also means as we become more and more open to ourself and thus open to others, that we become more open to the suffering of others and therefore the suffering of ourself. Sometimes we think, we practice hard, and then everything will get easier and easier. And we'll go to some higher realm. But actually, it's coming closer and closer to the ground and to everyone. The innocence of children, of being completely in the presence, is a kind of limited, narrow wisdom, you could say. It's not just living in the now, as they say, but living in all of it without ourself in the very middle of all of it. Instead of seeing the self as the center of the universe, which every child feels, we begin, as we practice, to, sometimes I think it's like licking a lollipop. It just gets smaller and smaller on the stick. It really wasn't anything very much at all. You can see right through it. It's ideas. This whole concept of studying the self and focusing on self and other is a sort of essence of bodhisattva practice. The very first bodhisattva vow is vowing to be with or to save all sentient beings, all beings. As Buddhism has evolved, this became a kind, an essential aspect of practice. We don't practice only for our own enlightenment, but for all. So as Coben says, the turning point comes when we begin loving other people. So it's nothing esoteric or fancy. In fact, it's very, very visceral. Very close and dear. Maybe you remember the first person you ever loved. I think I was 3, and there was this, I thought she was beautiful, young woman. I think she must have been 18 or 19 years old. When my mother had another baby, she asked Rose to come and take care of me. And I asked my mother what love was. And she said, it's when you feel really warm and happy with somebody else. And I said, oh, that's how I feel about Rose. Such a wonderful thing. Oh, I love Rose. Very, very young, we feel that. When we're new, we come into the world with it, really. rose was very brown, about as brown as Hershey chocolate. And I always loved to touch her skin and feel it like this. So, are there questions? Discussion? Dilemmas? Yeah.
I'll bite. When we walk around and say, not even referring to ourselves, but everything will be okay if X, Y, and Z are also true. You know, everything will be okay if the president does this and this war ends or these people agree to that. I feel that's like a, sometimes those are self-imposed conditions, and it's a version, it's a type or a different way of despecializing selfishness. It's like you're still saying, though, I'll be happy, I'll be content if these other things are true.
Mm-hmm.
It's subtle because you think that it's out there, but it's still about you.
It's dissatisfaction. Yeah. Yes. The Buddha said, you know, we can be satisfied with very little. But we're always in that antsy state of feeling that things aren't quite right until, and it never gets there. We never get there. Ever.
So what does that say then about the acceptance Kodenshin was talking about? That in the midst of all that, you still have to say, then where we are right now is it is what it is, and it's okay.
Yes. Complete acceptance. Which doesn't mean we don't try to change things,
mm-hmm.
But it's impossible to change anything unless we actually know what it is, which means, you know, another study to really see what's going on and accept it. And then, bam, go in and do what you have to do. It's kind of like going through an earthquake. Last week we were just packing up and some people had left, and suddenly this place started shaking and jumping and the floor was going like this, and most people ran outside immediately, bam, like that. They were out the door. Jane McDonald and I were standing in the middle of the floor having a discussion about something, and we just stood there holding on to each other while the floor was going under our feet. And we just, it was very cool. We just were totally accepting the whole situation, kind of marveling, oh, this is really something. And the others came in and shook their finger at us and said, did you know you're standing under the light?
Today someone had told me like a really, like, there's something that's causing them lots of pain, a habit that they can't seem to break. And it's really hard for me to know exactly what to say. We were on I Am, so whatever. But what are we to do when it seems like certain habits we have kind of, this kind of thing of separation. It's like a habit she has where, it just seems like to an outside observer, well, what you need to do is just don't do it. You know,
yes.
I mean, it's kind of a bit more heavier than that, but I mean, I don't know, to me, it basically kind of boils down to the same thing.
Well, so the thing is, how much you can do for somebody else's mind, how much effect, the most effect often that you can have is through simply listening and sympathizing. And if your experience coincides with the other person so that you've been through it and you have a solution for that you had yourself, you can share that. But we really can't solve other people's problems. But it helps tremendously to listen. In fact, Dogen says somewhere that when people bring a question and you just listen to them carefully, that often they will come up with the answer as they speak. So it's giving people the space to actually be who they are and what they are, that is one of the biggest gifts we can give to people, and the biggest help. Because just jumping in with a solution, you know, often people just flee from the solutions that other people give them. You know, there's something in the way of it. And they have to find their own way in. We all do. Well, we have one more, I think. Yes, one more. The one on Shikantaza. So that'll be next week. And we were going to talk a bit about what to do next. We had a running list. Does anybody remember what we thought we were going to do next? You remember. You always do, Wendy. Thank you.
Some Shinryu Suzuki.
Oh, is that Mind Beginner's Mind? That's right, we were. Good. All right. So we'll start on that when I get back. Good.